chewy.com.
Hello, X-Ray listeners, and welcome again to Jazz in Portland. I'm Thomas Smith here with Tom Skelly.
Hey, Thomas.
Here are some events for the week of May 11th. Monday, May 11th, at the Headliners Club, 17880 Southwest McEwen Road, Lake Oswego, Chance Hayden, Blue Wave Band Showcase, 8 p.m. Tuesday, May 12th, at Pizzario, 337 East Main Street, Hillsboro, Laura Kinnard's Live Jazz Jam, 7 to 10 p.m. Wednesday, May 13th, at the Benson Hotel, GE Lounge, 309 Southwest Broadway, Tom Grant with Julianne Johnson, John Mazzocco, and special guests, 5 to 7 p.m. At the Blue Diamond, 2016 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, Myrtle Brown and the Executive Groove, 8 to 11 p.m. Thursday, May 14th, at Wilf's, 800 Northwest 6th Avenue at Union Station, Rivka Ross Quartet Happy Hour, Jazz Series, 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, May 15th, at Bar Batalon, 606 Northeast Davis Street, Chris Clark Johnson, 6 to 8 p.m. Saturday, May 16th, at Living Room Theaters, 341 Southwest 10th Avenue, Anande with Paul K. Ward, 6 p.m. At Arrivederci, 17023 Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard, Heather Kaiser Quartet, featuring Ron Steen, Dennis Kayatsa, and Steve Christofferson, 7 to 9 p.m. Sunday, May 17th, at Clyde's Prime Rib, 5474 Northeast Sandy, Ron Steen's Sunday Jam, with George Mitchell and Perry Thorsell, 7:30 to 10 p.m.
Stay tuned for more info on Jazz in Portland and streaming online everywhere at xray.fm.
Enjoy Portland music.
You're listening to X-Ray FM.
KXRY Portland.
At 91.1 and 107.1 FM.
And in Nehalem,
Wheeler,
Manzanita,
and Rockaway Beach.
At 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere.
Live and archived.
At xray.fm.
Radio is yours.
Radio is yours.
Hoot and Howl is your weekly spot to turn back the clocks and hear the tracks from way, way back. True, blue, moldy, goldy oldies with me, DJ AM Gold. Join me for the platters that matter in a scratchy blend of the standards and forgotten gems that remain the building blocks of popular music. Week after week on X-Ray FM's original oldies radio show, Hoot and Howl. That's Hoot and Howl, 5 p.m. every Sunday. Live and archived at X-Ray FM.
X-Ray FM would like listeners to know about the Portland Urban Beekeepers, a local nonprofit dedicated to increasing education, advocacy, and awareness about beekeeping and preserving local pollinators. Did you know bees are responsible for one out of every three bites of food you eat? Portland Urban Beekeepers helps backyard beekeepers, engages through community outreach, and supports ongoing scientific research. More information at portlandurbanbeekeepers.org.
This is Natasha Fisher. I am on the board for X-Ray FM. I am also the interviewer for Talk to the Hand, and you're listening to X-Ray FM. Radio is truly yours.
Bringing you back to Tom in just a minute. First, here's a new one from Tom Waits and Massive Attack. You're on X-Ray.
Big legs dangle from a helicopter hole. Big sugar rhythm got me now. Brown, mean, and young, dumb and fork. What can you use a marine for? This is a fast machine gun war. Your boots on the ground, boots on the ground, boots on the ground, boots on the ground. We're trailing beyond our hedges, we're fighting your wars. Wade in the trenches and we're dealt with soul. With boots on the ground, boots on the ground. We're born shiny bullets in an army of ants. Blowed out a horn, we're sleeping on pants. Big, big. Well, we're hollering and we're burning down cities. Boots on the ground, boots on the ground. Shooting up the town. on Bingo's train when the cartridge is spent. Where do you think all your cartilage went? Boots on the ground, boots on the ground. Who the hell are these federal? Hiding in the Senate like a bloated ass tick. Air conditioned stick of loafers sitting in a room full of armed posters. A cold to a diamond, a vote into law. They campaign up all the blood they can draw. Mold your world, the soldier's just clay. How much does it have a soldier weigh? Cut you at the ankles and they throw that out of the way. Boots on the ground.
So a new Politico poll just landed, and the numbers are pretty stunning. 72% of Americans say there's too much money in our politics. Only 5% disagree. That's mind-boggling. 61% say billionaires have too much influence on elections. And this crosses every line. 80% of Harris voters agree. 77% of Trump voters agree. Two-thirds say special interest money is corruption that should be restricted. Remember, Elon Musk dropped $277 million to elect Trump in 2024. Since then, Musk has grown his personal wealth by $235 billion while gutting the very agencies that were investigating him and his companies. Citizens United cracked the door open. Billionaires drove a Mack truck through it. Americans across the spectrum see the rot. They want it stopped. So the question now is whether either party in Washington has the spine to take on the donor class that funds them. Meanwhile, CNN's Michael Smirkanish had a rough Saturday. He ran a poll asking whether Mamdani's tax the rich push, you know, he's got this tax on second homes in New York City, whether that's an asset or a liability for Democrats. He clearly expected the answer that he wanted. I mean, you know, Michael Smirkanish being a very, very wealthy man, you know, hey, please don't tax the rich, right? But instead, with over 25,000 votes, 51% called it an asset. Only 49% said it was a liability for Democrats. Wow, Smirkanish said on the air, visibly stunned. Then he insisted, 49% is the correct answer. Yeah, you heard right. The minority is the right answer because Michael says so. Meanwhile, as you read above, that Politico poll shows that 72% of Americans think there's too much money in politics. But on cable news, taxing the rich is still treated like a shocking, brave opinion. Memo to Michael Smirkanish. The American people figured this out a long time ago. They're waiting on pundits like you to catch up. I mean, this is just... Meanwhile, did Ted Cruz just confess to killing Social Security? At the Milken conference in Beverly Hills this week, Ted Cruz let it slip. He called Trump accounts, you know, these accounts you can open and they put money in for your kids. He called it the dirty little secret, his words. He admitted that conservatives have spent 50 years trying to privatize Social Security. Then he laid out the plan. Get parents hooked on Trump accounts for their kids, then convince them to divert payroll taxes into private Wall Street accounts instead of Social Security. Babies grow up, Cruz said. We gave the money to babies, and so the old people didn't get pissed. Right. You know, Bush tried this in 2005, and he got crushed. But he came right out and said that he was trying to replace Social Security. Now they're sneaking it through the back door. Hand your retirement to the same Wall Street casinos that crashed the economy in 2008. That's the plan. Trump promised he'd never touch Social Security, but Trump is a congenital liar. He just can't stop lying. It's what he does for a living. It's why he's a con man. It's what he's done his whole entire life. And Ted Cruz just admitted that Trump and the GOP and all this, oh, we love Social Security. We would never touch Social Security. It was just a lie. just an absolute, flat out, blatant, no other way to say it, lie. It's just incredible. And here you've got, you know, 70%, 72% of Americans say there's too much money in politics, at the same time that the bankers in New York City and the Wall Street bankers are buying politicians and the entire Republican Party to create Trump accounts so that they can eventually replace Social Security with them. These guys play the long game. You know, I mean, they're looking at their billions and trying to figure out how to make it trillions, and, you know, some of them are succeeding. It's incredible. So what's on your mind today? Don in Pittsburgh, Kansas. Hey, Don, what's up?
Oh, hi there, Tom. I don't know. I didn't hear the first half hour of the show. So, I mean, today is the day when the mifepristone issue from the
expires.
Fifth Circuit. Yeah, they'll be taking it up in the Supreme Court today. And since they're allowing it to expire, you know, people expect a fast, explanation
right.
decision.
Shadow docket decision. Yeah.
Shadow docket, yeah, which is a heck of a way to do things. And, of course, the other big issue with the court was the redistricting. I mean, anywhere from 12 to 20 House districts could easily go to the Republicans, and that'd be pretty hard to overcome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
and,
true.
You know, we don't really have, I mean, you know, for years, we don't really have a democracy. Like I always say, the Senate has more people representing prairie dogs and coyotes than it does representing people in some cases with all those Western states.
Yeah.
And, you know, some kind of adjustment is needed, and it won't happen spontaneously. It'll have to be forced, and I'm into doing whatever needs to be done, but just sitting back and hoping ain't going to cut it.
Well, there's two ways to do it. One would require amending the Constitution, which would be to make Senate representation proportional rather than just an absolute number of two. The alternative would be for the very large states to break themselves up, for California to become three states, Texas and Florida to become three states, New York to become three states, some of the mid-large-sized states, maybe Michigan, Ohio, would become two states. And then you would have Senate representation that's better. The third option that Democrats could do without these, you know, that second one requires both the cooperation of Congress and the individual states themselves. Because when states break up, not only does it have to be approved by the state legislature and all that sort of thing, but it also has to be approved, it has to be rubber-stamped by Congress. But the third option would be for Puerto Rico, Washington, D.C., and the islands out there that include Guam and the Solomon Islands and those other U.S. territories to become three new states, because they all vote heavily Democratic right now. And that's something that, you know, I was back when Biden was president, I was saying, you guys need to get on this right now. And they just always thought that they had something more important to do. But that's stuff that I think should be at the top of the list.
Well, and I agree. Those would be much easier. I mean, constitutional amendments are slow and cumbersome, and by the time you get it done...
Usually. Not always. The 18-year-old vote was fewer than 3 months from the time it was introduced until the time it passed.
Yeah, when was that? That was in the...
It was 70s. 72, I think.
Yeah. The Congress then was highly functional compared to what we have these days.
Yeah, it certainly.
Well, anyhow, I think it's people need to make sure that what we really need is to surround the Supreme Court with a million people.
Yeah.
While they make their deliberations, and you know maybe have 50,000 or 60,000 waiting at their individual homes for them, all peaceful, of course.
Take away their millions of dollars.
Right, well, of course. Well, that's once again that requires the cooperation of the executive branch and DOJ, and we wouldn't see that.
I get it.
Well, anyhow, thank you.
Okay, good talking to you, Don. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Back with more of your calls in just a minute. Stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. I'll be right back with your phone. And welcome back, Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, not too much, Tom. Hey, this isn't what I called in about, but the caller that was talking about global warming, you know, with this Hanta virus, I can't even think about global warming right now without going into a mild panic.
Why?
Because I really, I had direct dealing with with Korean hemorrhagic fever. I mean, I wasn't contaminated with it, but a friend of mine died of Korean hemorrhagic fever, and it happens just fairly frequently in South Korea. Mm-hmm. And South Korea's got the same climate as Oregon, basically. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, so I got a lot of knowledge about it. I can tell you this, all right, when COVID broke out, it was a lot of it was from delaying. Nobody wanted to jump the gun. Nobody wanted to start a panic. You know, as far as we knew, it was just a coronavirus, right? Mm-hmm. It won't be this way with Hanta virus. They'll start a panic, but I can't help but, you know, think about, they'll have urgency. I shouldn't say a panic. Okay. Scientists will deal with it with some urgency, but I can't help but wonder, we have the same idiot in charge there in DC, which is a little bit scary.
Yeah, I know. The Hanta virus originally was not easily communicated between humans, and now it is. This is what they're called the Andean
New World
variant, which means that the virus itself is mutating. It apparently doesn't mutate as rapidly as coronaviruses do, which is the common cold category of viruses in addition to COVID. And it apparently doesn't mutate as rapidly as flu, but it is mutating. And if that Andean version mutates again into one that's more virulent, it could conceivably become an international pandemic. The thing that concerns me is bird flu, because Trump has shut down all of the bird flu tracking and all of the, there was a major effort to make an mRNA vaccine for bird flu, and Bob Kennedy killed that. So that concerns me.
Well, my theory behind hantavirus is it's a remnant from an extinct rodent species, probably Mylagalus. Mylagalus was a horned rodent. And what's this got to do with global warming? Well, Mylagalus became extinct during the Pleistocene, Eocene thermal maximum, and that's when the Atlantic Ocean flooded over and created the Mediterranean. And if you can look on Roman maps to this very day, Tom, when the Romans took over the Yugoslav area, the Baltics, they used flat-bottom boats because of all the shallow rivers and waterways and marshes and swamps. None of those exist in that area anymore. You know what I'm saying? The Mediterranean's receded. But anyways, I mean, I think it's a remnant from an extinct rodent species, you know, a viral genetic remnant.
Well, it's still carried by living rodents. I mean, you know, people in the American Southwest, we have about a dozen cases a year of Hanta virus. It killed Gene Hackman and his wife.
Yeah, but anyway, so that's not what I called. I got a deep political thing I want to run by you because I've been thinking about it. Look,
okay, you got 15 seconds.
Yeah. I think that the Republican Party has evolved to a point. It's not, you know, I've been saying it for a while. It's not really American anymore. Vladimir Putin caught it Vladimir Putin told Donald J. Trump he was going to invade the Ukraine, and Trump didn't do anything about it. Vladimir Putin recognized right there that it's not an American political party anymore. Not American in the sense.
Except
of the
I thought the invasion of Ukraine happened during Biden's presidency. Or are you?
Yeah, but he told Trump.
Oh,
Putin
I see.
Told Trump.
I see.
Trump admitted it. Trump admitted it before you criticized. Trump did admit
well,
it.
Yeah. Trump gets his marching orders from Putin apparently every other week. He was just talking to him again this last week. Thanks, Dave. Want news that actually has your back? The Commonwealth Report brings you honest, unfiltered reporting. News for the public, not the powerful. Twice daily updates that matter. Head to commonwealthreport.news and subscribe today. Take back your news. You know, Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew both took cash bribes while they were in the White House. Since then, you know, the Supreme Court, or at least five Republicans on the Supreme Court, made it a lot easier for politicians to take bribes with their Citizens United decision. Which basically legalized political bribery as long as it's done through campaigns or PACs or super PACs. But for some people, there's just never enough money, right? Donald Trump has been running small-time hustles to make money for decades, selling sneakers, Bibles, steaks, vodka, water. But now he's hit the big time. He's got these fungible tokens, right? These fungible crypto assets, which are basically just digital pictures of Donald Trump that say fight, fight, fight. And he has turned them into an $8 billion machine. His wife is in on this, too, with his Trump coin. It's a new way that foreign powers and billionaires in the United States can just shovel money into Donald Trump's pocket. There's a whole article about it over at HartmanReport.com titled Presidential Payola, the Evolution of Political Bribery. Check it out. 20 minutes past the hour, picking up your calls. Here's Scott in Los Angeles. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Good morning. Thank you for being the lighthouse, the Paul Revere of the airwaves.
Thank you.
I'm a baby boomer born in 1954. Born in 1954, and, you know, television was, like, really new. Mm-hmm. And those commercials are just driven into my head. And there was one particular commercial for Ipana, probably the top-selling brand of toothpaste.
I remember.
It was an animated commercial with a little character called Bucky Beaver. And he would say, brush up, brush up, brush up with the new iPad. I think that's where Trump got his Russia, Russia, Russia. Because he was 11, you know, when that commercial first came out. I think it stopped at 1965. I'm wondering if I'm the only baby boomer that thinks that. Put that together. Anyway, thank you so much, Tom. I love your program. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you, Scott. Yeah, I'd completely forgot about that iPana commercial, but you're absolutely right. Whatever happened to iPana? It's long gone.
I think they figured out that they didn't want any more animated stuff, and they canceled in 1965. But it's still on YouTube. You can see the commercial on YouTube. iPana toothpaste.
Interesting. Thank you, Scott. Bill in Sun City, Arizona. Hey, Bill, what's up?
I think I got it, Tom.
What's that?
Well, the chief complaint I hear from our side is how ignorant they are. Let's address that in a way that is right here at hand. You know, you lit my fuse. By your words, I'm so inspired. You said we're showing our age. We have to show our age. The 70 years you and I have acquired have taught us, right? We've got a great sense of history. The young people I talked to today, they have no sense of history. Education has been captured, and it's pretty much abandoned, these poor kids. The young man that took notice to my little 32-year-old two-seater and remarked to it, he said to me, he just graduated high school. I said, you went all the way through school, got a fifth-grade education. He frowned. He said to me, you know, if that wasn't true, it would be funny.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm suggesting is we say to these people around us that we love and care for that don't have that sense of history, where do you want to go to dinner tonight? Mexican, burger, Chinese, Italian? One proviso. You listen to the Declaration of Independence with me. You listen to the Constitution with me. After you light that fuse, Tom, you tell them, please, PBS has each president on YouTube. I've been listening to them every night now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's giving me a great sense of history, what these presidents were dealing with, right?
Yeah.
What they were dealing with was the people around them,
yeah.
Right? So what I'm saying is let's go to the people we love. The shortage of teachers can't exist. We are the teachers now.
Yeah.
To the people we love that don't have that sense, that we recognize that they don't, this is what we do.
I like it, Bill. I think we all have an obligation to educate the people around us. It's why I do what I do, and apparently you are too. Bill, good on you. Thank you. Mike in Tecumseh, Michigan. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, I had an idea for gerrymandering.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know it probably won't happen because of money and politics, but go back to county lines, okay, or parish lines, wherever.
Yeah.
And it would hurt both parties. It would hurt both parties, but I think it would straighten things out. I wonder if there's any states out there that do have just county lines.
I don't know. Basically, are there any states that have never been seriously gerrymandered? It's a very good question,
right,
Mike. If there is, I would hold it up as an example. The problem is you've got some counties that have very, very small populations and other counties that have very large populations. So you would have
that's
to draw
true, but then you
districts beyond just county lines. But But I get your point.
You have to add county lines or subtract county lines.
Exactly.
You know, but
or divide counties like you know, big cities.
Well, I don't know if the county, maybe yeah, big city that might be a problem. I don't know.
I mean, you know, like Houston or Dallas is Dallas County, isn't it? As I recall, and some multiple millions of people, so it represents several congressional districts, even though it's one city. I think that's true of both Dallas and Houston. It's probably true of pretty much every big city in America. I mean, Portland only has 700,000 people, so we're all in. I believe we're all in one district. Maybe we're in two. I know certainly with the suburbs, we're two districts. Say what?
Maybe you could have Dallas North and Dallas South.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah, I don't know. We got to do something. I'm with you, Mike.
Some of these look like snakes. You look some of them like snakes.
Oh, I know. Or salamanders, which is why they called them gerrymanders. They named it after Elbridge Gerry, but the mander part was because it looked like a salamander, and that was the district that he had, you know, drawn for himself and his party, the Federalists, back when he was the governor of Massachusetts. In the early 1800s.
Okay, I just wanted to get your opinion on this, and so I just want to find out what you thought. So.
Polygons is the, you know, it's got to have, like, you know, contiguous, you know, not quite a circle, not quite a square, but, you know, it's a polygon. It doesn't look like a salamander. It doesn't look like a snake or, like, you know, an alligator or something like that. It just, you know.
Yeah, it looks like a county. How's that?
Yeah, well, you know, counties, yeah, I mean, you know, counties go back to the very, very early stages, and they don't, and those county lines don't account for how you know, cities grow and things like that. But you're onto something. I think this is a real issue that Americans are struggling with. Mike, thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. It's 27 minutes past the hour. I'll be back with more of your calls on the other side of the break. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Talk media for the rest of us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
So our transportation secretary, who's supposed to be overseeing the price of gas, has been being paid to be a reality TV star for the last 7 months as he travels around the country with his wife. Really? This is the Commonwealth Report, news for the public, not the powerful. You can follow us at commonwealthreport.news. How much will Trump's Iran war really cost us? University of Michigan economist Justin Wolfers just blew up the Pentagon's $25 billion estimate. He says the real cost runs into hundreds of billions, very possibly trillions. The Pentagon comptroller told Congress $25 billion. Independent analysts already counted $71 billion spent in the first 2 months, about $1.2 billion every day. Trump promised $200 billion when he launched this war in February. Now he wants a $1.5 trillion defense budget. That's a 40% jump, roughly $4,000 per American household. Wolfers said the war has already wiped out about $3 trillion off the stock market. Quote, war is hell, and hell comes with a hefty price tag, he wrote. The Iran war costs $3 trillion when you count lifetime veteran care. Working people pay this bill. Billionaires pocket the contracts. The American people see the rot. Washington cashes the checks. A new Politico poll just landed, and the numbers are stunning. 72% of Americans say there's too much money in our politics. Only 5% disagree. 61% of billionaires say billionaires have too much influence on our elections. And this crosses every line. 87% of Harris voters agree. 77% of Trump voters agree. Two-thirds say special interest money is corrupting what should be restricted. Remember Elon Musk dropped $277 million to elect Trump in 2024? Since then, Musk has grown his personal wealth by $235 billion while gutting the very agencies that were investigating him. Citizens United cracked that door open. Billionaires drove a Mack truck through it. Americans across the spectrum see the rot. They want it stopped. question is whether either party in Washington has the spine to take on the donor class that funds them. Did Ted Cruz just confess to killing Social Security? At the Milken conference in Beverly Hills this week, Ted Cruz let it slip. He called Trump accounts, quote, the dirty little secret, his words. He admitted conservatives have spent 50 years trying to privatize Social Security. Then he laid out the plan. Get parents hooked on Trump accounts for their kids, then convince them to divert payroll taxes into private Wall Street accounts instead of Social Security. Babies grow up, Cruz said. We gave the money to babies, and so the old people didn't get pissed, end quote. Bush tried this in 2005 and got crushed. Now they're sneaking it in through the back door. Hand your retirement to the same Wall Street casinos that crashed the economy in 2008. Yep, that's the plan. Trump promised he'd never touch Social Security. Cruz just admitted otherwise. Trump's closing the chapter on FEMA. Trump's FEMA Review Council just dropped its final report, and it's a doozy. Quote, in time to close the chapter on FEMA, the, end quote, they wrote, the 12-member panel wants disaster response handed to the states, with Washington just chipping in. This is happening as climate disasters explode. 2025 was the third worst year for billion-dollar weather disasters ever. 23 of them, 276 dead, $115 billion in damage. The 74-page report mentions climate exactly once. FEMA's already lost a third of its workforce under Trump. Experts say small rural counties depend on FEMA expertise and federal dollars to survive hurricanes, floods, and wildfires. Now they're on their own. Hurricane season is weeks away. Storms don't care which state you live in. But this administration sure does, especially when it comes to handing out aid. Why did Trump fire the CDC inspectors right before a cruise ship outbreak? A deadly hantavirus outbreak is spreading from the Dutch cruise ship MV Hondius. Three dead, at least eight infected with the Andes virus, the only hantavirus that spreads person to person. 38% of people with respiratory symptoms die. There's no vaccine and no treatment. And here's the kicker. Last year, Trump and Elon Musk's Doge fired every full-time inspector in the CDC's vessel sanitation program. Three of the CDC's 20 port health stations now have zero staff. Trump also pulled us out of the World Health Organization. Six Americans have already disembarked and come home. Six states are monitoring exposed residents. Senator Schumer is demanding Trump rehire the disease detectives now. Schumer said public health under this administration is a sinking ship, and Trump keeps firing the crew. CNN anchor stunned to discover Americans like taxing billionaires. CNN's Michael Smirkanish had a rough Saturday. He ran a poll asking whether Mamdani's tax the rich push is an asset or liability for Democrats. He clearly expected the answer he wanted. Instead, with over 25,000 votes, 51% called it an asset. Only 49% called it a liability. Wow, Smirkanish said on the air, visibly stunned. Then he insisted, 49% is the correct answer. You heard it right. The minority is the correct answer because Michael, who's rich, says so. Meanwhile, as you read above, that political poll shows 72% of Americans think there's too much money in politics. But on cable news, taxing the rich is still treated like a shocking, brave opinion. Memo to Michael. The American people figured this out a long time ago. They're waiting on pundits like you to catch up. And that's the way it is today, Monday, May 11th, 2026. Share the Tom Hartman Program with your friends. Our podcast, The Hartman Report, is absolutely free and available wherever fine podcasts are available. And the entire three-hour podcast is available over at tomhartman.com. So what do we call the really, really mind-bogglingly rich? You know, at the founding of the Republic, they were referred to as speculators or moneyed interest or aristocrats. In the years leading up to the Civil War, we called them the cotton lords and the plantation aristocracy. In the late 19th century, they were the robber barons. In the 1930s, FDR called them the economic royalists. But since the Reagan Revolution, we've just called them billionaires. And now, you know, some of them want to call themselves tech bros. Like, that's kind of a good thing, you know, like tech is positive and bros, you know, like Mark Zuckerberg saying we need more masculine energy in American business culture. So we need a new phrase. I would like to suggest the morbidly rich. morbidly suggests unhealthy. And the vast riches that some of these people have is unhealthy to our democracy, particularly since five Republicans on the Supreme Court said that morbidly rich people can buy politicians. And it's unhealthy for them, too. So morbidly rich. There's an op-ed over at HartmanReport.com all about it. Check it out. Five minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Picking up your calls here, Mike in Racine, Wisconsin. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing? Hey, I got an idea here that I've been hearing about and been talking to some of my other buddies. And it has to do with, in the spirit of the athletes back in the day who got involved with civil rights movement, like Jim Brown, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Ali, Bill Russell, and them. What do you think would happen? I'm thinking just that Jim Crow South. What do you think would happen if all the black American athletes that are going to these universities, and I'm thinking of the big sports like football and basketball, if they all decided, well, since you're going to take away black representation in this state, we're not going to represent your school and bring in money and bring in notoriety to your school. We're going to transfer out, and we're going to go to the Northeast and up north to the schools in states that don't gerrymander like Indiana. We're not going to go there, but in Missouri, we're not going to go there. But, we're going to go up there. We're going to go out east, the Northeast up there where you are. I can think of four schools, Oregon, Oregon State, Washington State. What if all these athletes left, and they can get their NIL money? If they started just leaving and saying, we're not going to your school until you guys fix this. We're not going back to the Jim Crow South. As a matter of fact, what we're going to do, we're going to leave, and your colleges are going to look like the Jim Crow South when you didn't want any black athletes to go to to participate in your sports down there. What do you think would happen to them if that happened? And then number two, if the NFL said to the South, you guys don't have any black representation down there. We saw what you did. You don't get a Super Bowl down there until you fix this problem. What do you think about that?
With regard to the NFL and the Super Bowl, I think that's a remote possibility. The NFL tries to avoid politics, and although, race is a big thing for the NFL. But what you're talking about, Mike, is already a very public conversation that's going on social media. That started last week, and that is not just the college teams, but also the pro teams, that black athletes should just say, okay, we'll play out this year, and we have a contract, but, when our contract is up for renewal next year or the year after, we are not going back. As a black athlete, I am not going to go back to a state that has no black representation in Congress. And, or at least, there are some states who don't have black representation largely because they don't have a lot of black people, Vermont, for example. But but they're not intentionally trying to keep black people out. Whereas Mississippi, Louisiana, in the former Confederate states, they're just right up front saying they're going to do everything they can to suppress black power. So, I get it. And I'm telling you, that conversation is happening, and I don't think it's going to go away. I think it's going to get louder and louder. So we'll have to wait and see.
I hope it happens. It'd be a great thing to see and see just how fast these states change their mind about what they're doing, because I think this whole gerrymandering thing that they're doing, when I look at what happened in Tennessee, that is just blatant racism what they're doing. They're just like, let's just wipe them out. You got no representation in the state. Therefore, we really don't care about what happens to you, basically, is what they're saying. So if you want to take us back, okay, then let's not give you the
recognition. And increasingly, as these states become pariah states, they start experiencing what South Africa experienced back in the 80s, which is that even the big bands won't come and play there any longer. The rock and roll singers and whatnot. The conventions won't come to their states anymore. I mean, that sort of thing is all potentially in the pipeline. So we'll have to see how it all plays out. But I suspect that we're going to see we are seeing right now the resegregation, the aggressive resegregation of America and the embrace of Jim Crow by the Republican Party. But we haven't yet started to see the backlash. And the backlash, I suspect, is going to take a whole bunch of different forms, including the ones that you and I have talked about and probably a few that we haven't thought about yet. So keep your eyes open, Mike. I think you're onto something.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Roger in Seattle. Hey, Roger, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm trying to build on some of your fine, as somebody commented, the most educated listeners in the United States. So I'm going to give you a weather report from the Trump downsized NOAA office here in Seattle. We have a regional NOAA office. So it's going to be a Georgia, Texas, Seattle, and a national weather report. So your wonderful baby boomer like me gives the Seattle is cloudy with a chance of raining gooey Ipana toothpaste. I.e., so anyway, what I'm trying to do is answer Representative Jayapal the way I would have answered it, but she did a fine answer, but it's related to Georgia and Roy Wood learning that he is distantly related to the late Congressman Lewis. That Georgia on my mind, that is a famous song, of course. But when I heard about our wonderful majority leader from Texas, Tom DeLay, that reminded me, FEMA is trying to be cut back, according to Chainsaw Musk. And, by the way, all those net FEMA dollars go to red states. So maybe that will be the deciding backbone for the Republicans rather than the $10 gas that happens, say, in July or August, to finally say, okay, enough of this guy, let's impeach him. So get him out of office. So, you know, delaying the federal tax won't do it. And lastly, my answer, if she said Trump won, I'd say yes. The contract on America, as your wise listener reminded us. But two, if it's the current Trump two, it's Project 2025. So all you have to do, you know, Tom DeLay, in Spokane, we had a speaker who is now forever in the comics as the white senator, whatever. White-haired guy, but they are currently have a Trump supporter who is just like the Republicans who voted in, you know, to beat the former speaker, and they thought, oh, well, speakership goes with the office, right? Nah. They're never going to get a speaker from Spokane, Washington, and for another 40 years, if that long.
Oh,
but Trump to Project 2025 was the best answer I was looking for Representative Jayapal. So that when talk to the dog catcher, you find out what's the local issue for the dog catcher that's running as a Republican. If they, you know, picking up dog do is fine, okay. But say you want to get out of the war of Iran, and he says, I can't do that. I'm dog catcher. Well, you're a Republican, so why don't you talk to the Republicans about it?
I got it, Roger. We're getting redundant here, but yeah, I got it. Thank you. Michael in Bronx, New York. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Tom, good buddy. All right, first off, let me give a bravo to all those that are appearing on the talk show circuit, MS Now and CNN, calling out these Republicans, saying you're cheating, you're stealing the elections. And there was one instance in which one was saying right to a Republican's face, even though a Republican wanted to lie, and it had a smirk on his face, like, you know your ass got busted, all right? Mm-hmm. But to enrich the arguments, I found two inconsistencies here. First, in the Supreme Court, and I thank and credit Ellie McStar for raising this. I can't remember what show he was on, but he reminded everybody that back in February, when the Republicans wanted to engage in this gerrymandering, the Supreme Court said, nope, you cannot do that because we're too close to the election, and it's absolutely unfair, unconstitutional. But that was back in February. Now we're in May, and the U.S. Supreme Court does a complete 180, right, which does not make sense since we're now much closer to the election.
Yeah, I think he was talking to Ari Berman when he said that, yeah.
Yeah. So it's my suspicion that somebody got to the Supreme Court and Barry probably manipulated them, but that's one inconsistency. The second inconsistency is when the Supreme Court gave a green light for this gerrymandering all across the nation, and here's Republicans going buck wild in redistricting their districts so they could shrink out or eliminate Democratic representation. But then when it came to a state like Virginia that consented, or consulted, I should say, with their constituents, the majority Democratic constituents, and they say yes just to balance the playing field with the Republicans. Now you have a Republican judge and a Republican majority Supreme Court in Virginia said, nope, you cannot do that.
Yeah, I think the important point, Michael, is that they didn't just overturn gerrymandering. They overturned an election. And that's a
my thing is, it seems their message is good for GOPs, but not for these.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well said. Michael, thank you. Thank you very much. 46 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Fair and only slightly unbalanced. I'll be right back with your calls. And welcome back. Tom in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Tom, what's up? Tom in Columbus, watching us on Free Speech.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, sorry about that. Put it down. Hey, you're talking about how lame our press is. Mm-hmm. What percentage of Americans know that Donald Trump was such an incorrigible delinquent that he had to go to military school, that he beat up another student so bad he put him in the hospital, he assaulted teachers, his own mother was afraid of him. He used to go to New York City and Manhattan and buy switchblades. Did any of this ever get into the media?
None of it was secret. I mean, I referenced some of it in my book, The Last American President, and that was all from public sources.
So, yeah, but I mean,
I don't think the average person knows, but, you know, anybody who follows Trump carefully knows that, you know, he was a bully.
Everybody should have known he had to go to military school, probably in lieu of going to a juvenile detention facility. He wasn't a good person, and he's never been.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, it's just our media is useless.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent point, Tom. Thank you very much for the call.
And, everybody.
And yeah, good talking to you and for making it. Alice in San Angelo, Texas. Hey, Alice, what's up?
Well, Tom, I don't understand. If the states run the elections, how can the government demand election, your voting rolls? I don't understand that.
Well, that's what Mark Elias is arguing in court right now, is that this is illegal, this executive order from Trump. But you've got a whole bunch of Republican states who've already said, okay, cool.
Well, yeah, the Republican states, we would have to fight them.
Yeah.
We always have to fight them. I mean, I live in a Republican state, and I know you always fight them. But he'll go after the Democratic states. He'll go after the people. I mean, we are literally in a position, it seems to me like, that we are going to have to hope every registered Republican almost surprises Trump and votes against every Republican.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like the situation to me that we are in right now.
Yeah.
Because every time something good happens, something bad happens. And I mean, my family was split straight in half by Trump. I have two children that are so deep into it that they consider me as having somehow disappointed them so bad for my stance against him that we can barely talk.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
when we go to things, when I go to a graduation or whatever, they live in Arkansas, both of them. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I have three other children that live here in town with me that are on my side, but it's heartbreaking when you have two children, two well-educated children, I might add. Mm-hmm. They're not dummies by any means. Did well in school, college graduated, have excellent jobs, make plenty of money. And they are so deep into this that you cannot talk to them.
Yeah.
So the, you know, the Republican states, they're going to go with Trump. I can guarantee you, no matter what, a lot of them are going to vote for him anyway. And so it just, it's like we have to hope every Republican either decides it's not worth voting or switch their vote.
I'm with you. Alice, thank you. Thank you very much. Sorry to hear about your family. Hey, thanks so much for sharing our program and for reaching out to our stations and sponsors and letting them know that you're listening. It really means a lot to us. So have you noticed that the Republicans are pretty much not talking about a constitutional convention anymore? They used to be gung-ho to rewrite the Constitution. You know, they wanted to put corporate personhood in there. They wanted to change it so that women can't vote. They wanted to do away with the election of senators, repeal the 17th Amendment, take us back to them being appointed by the states. They had all these weird—they wanted to outlaw labor unions, all these weird ideas, but they've stopped talking about it. I mean, they're still moving forward on it, but it's not Project 2025, for example, you know, their ultimate talking document does not have one single mention in it about a constitutional convention. Why would that be? Well, it's because the Supreme Court is doing their work for them. I mean, you know, just they have overturned Article 2. They've overturned the first, fourth, ninth, and 14th amendments. They've overturned Article 1, Section 7. All the details of this whole thing are over at HartmanReport.com. You got to check it out. Welcome back. 52 minutes past the hour. Picking up your calls, Louise in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. Hey, Louise, what's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Thinking about, you know, how do we determine if we're discriminating at the polls and everything, who's black? Because we've become a really biracial, you know, country, and there's a lot of biracial people. Practically everyone I know is related to someone biracial. So how do you determine who's black? And then I realized, you know, if we all get our rights taken off of us, we just say, are we black or are we white? Well, we're black. We're all black.
Yeah.
We all had our rights taken away. And that's what people don't understand. All you have to do is look at Medicare and the Southern, and to get it passed, we had to go to the 80-20.
Right.
And that means we all pay 20%. Other countries, they get everything paid for.
Yeah.
But that was because the blacks, they thought the blacks couldn't afford it.
That's right.
So here we are. We're all black.
Yeah. Anybody who makes less than 100 grand a year, yeah.
It's black because the laws that affect them, it doesn't matter if you say, you know, are you black or white? These laws are affecting and then you can't vote, but they already have that rigged. So there you go. You're all black. It's just like right after the Civil War when everybody was banned together. So
yeah,
anyhow,
I get your argument, Louise. I think it's important to note that there are still huge barriers that are not just economic. And, you know, the biggest part of white privilege is not having to worry about, you know, how people are going to react to the color of your skin when you go out and do things, you know.
Right. It's the jobs and all things like that.
Yeah.
But I think if you can get everyone to think in terms of more of us being alike, then we could all vote for the same thing.
Well, I think
I know it goes deeper than that.
Yeah, this is where a number of the movements were coming together back in the 60s was, you know, making it clear that economics and race are inextricably tied. The billionaires are coming for all of us ultimately, but, you know, they're coming for the black people
first. And whenever you, I took a graduate course in psychology, this is in the 70s, so the disadvantage. And part of it was if one person's disadvantaged, everybody's going to be disadvantaged.
Right.
You know, yeah. And I've always been looking for that. And I thought, whoa, wait a minute. We're all disadvantaged in, to a point.
Yeah, no, a good point.
So
I got it.
We all have to band together.
I got it. Yep. Thank you, Louise. Barbara in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Hey, Barbara, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I'm from Arkansas, Northwest Arkansas. And Friday, you had a woman, I think, from Alabama call in, and she was commenting on that the age of consent in Arkansas is 13. Well, first of all, that's absolutely wrong. It's 16, which is not that much better, but it is a big gap from 13 to 16.
Good.
And also, I've been a long time. I love you. I love Amy. I love everybody. And so I don't know because I'm traveling, but if you've been pushing her movie, Steal This Story, Please, Amy Goodman, Democracy mm-hmm. Now!, I think everybody should go. And also, the interview with Jon Stewart and Amy is absolutely fabulous. Now, one last thing. I graduated in 1967 in a somewhat, you know, it was a big school, but I felt like I had a decent education. And I went on, and history, and you say it all the time, it's decided by those that are in power. I have never been so disgusted and upset with our country, and I know you feel the same, but, you know, we have to keep fighting, and we have to keep working very, very hard. And if you look at some of the comedic stuff when they're going around and asking the MAGA people, what do you think caused the Civil War? And they're all just like blank.
Yeah.
They have no idea what caused the Civil War. And, I mean, they're just like,
it's tragic,
I don't
know.
Yeah. Anyway, I love you. I love Amy. I love Jeremy Scahill. I love all of you all, and everybody needs to get on to this. And please go and watch Amy's movie.
Yeah.
Okay?
Where is that available?
You have to go and put it in, and it'll pull up in all the different theaters that it's being shown.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure you'd be able to find it in Portland.
Sure. Okay. Thanks a lot, Barbara. Good to hear from you. Thank you. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. It's the Tom Hartman Program, the place where despair is not an option. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
X-Ray FM is supported by our friends at Harka Architecture, whose mission is to uplift your ideas and our community. Harka brings expertise in toxicity, high performance, and resiliency to all their projects. They are a full-service architectural and interior firm specializing in middle housing infill, ADUs, remodels, and adaptive commercial reuse.
This is Bird Note. Peer into the world of birds, and eyes of many different colors peer back. There are shades of light and dark, yellows, whites, greens, the red eyes of certain hawks, ducks, loons, herons, and songbirds. These colors really pop, because birds have no white around the iris like we do. So the yellow eyes of a great horned owl or a herring gull seem to give the birds a fierce, penetrating glare. While eye color isn't tied to one group of birds or another, a pattern common to many birds is a change in eye color as immature birds grow to adulthood. Bald eagles, ring-billed gulls, ducks such as Goldeneye and Scalp have brown eyes as youngsters and yellow as adults. Red-tailed hawks reverse this pattern, with their eyes changing from yellow to brown, while the yellow eyes of a young Cooper's hawk turn deep red as it reaches maturity. Not all birds' eyes change color as the birds age. But for those whose eye color appears